We're here to talk about race and politics in the 2012 elections. Frankly, race is something that people don't like to talk about, but it's one of the big realities of American democracy, and especially in political elections. I'd say big picture, I'm convinced that race relations in the United States are improving. Big picture, you know, considering that we come from a history of slavery and segregation and discrimination. However, small picture, right now, 2012, I think we're in a very volatile and uncertain area, particularly with the November elections coming up. I'm concerned about the role that race is playing in that election.
Yes, I would certainly agree with that. And, you know, when you look at the country's history, it is remarkable how in such a relatively short time, a few decades, we've turned around in many ways, and we still have a long way to go, in part because we won't address the structural inequities that were created as a result of subordination of one group for all these years. And so as long as we don't seriously address and tackle those tough issues, there are always going to be groups that's going to exploit racial attitudes, especially during campaigns, right? Because that's how you mobilize people to come out to vote, you know. They want to take this to get that, or they want to suppress your vote, you know. And so you get that type of discussions. But certainly, when you look at where the country was in the 1960s, here we are, two PhDs, a congressman, and a former congressional staffer. If we were in Alabama, our home state, you know, he can drink at one water fountain, I can drink at another, right? And so certainly we're not there anymore. But campaigns, elections, the last 4 years of the first African-American president has definitely revealed some things about our country, about some attitudes that still exist. But at the same time, the election of this president revealed something about our country and the attitudes that exist. So we're not where we should be, but we're not where we were.
I wonder what you think about a change in whatever the hot button word is, whether it's affirmative action, whether it's racism, whether it's quotas. This year, I think we could probably agree that it's immigration reform. This kind of plays into that racial part of voting blocks and the Latino population, right, and things like that. Is this the next battle in the war of equality?
It's interesting you said that, and we mentioned some of that at the lecture at Paul Simon Institute, but I think David Yepsen asked a similar question, and I responded this way. One, I think, in part, yes, definitely. You know, when you have laws that want to criminalize someone because of the way they look or the way they speak, ask them to show their papers to prove they're citizens, that's a throwback to where African Americans were after the Civil War. For example, and I was listening to this debate from 2008, and Governor Rudy Giuliani was talking about sanctuary cities. That was a question in this debate, whether or not cities have been established to essentially allow those who are here illegally or undocumented, whether or not the city was allowing them to be there. And Giuliani turned to Romney and said, you know, we may have a sanctuary city, but he has a sanctuary mansion, meaning that he's allowing immigrants to work on his mansion. And Romney turned to Giuliani and said, certainly, he says, it is un-American for anyone to hear someone's accent, or if they talk funny, to go out there and say, show me your papers, right? He said, that's un-American. And just a couple years later, we had Jerem Brewer, Arizona, with that tough immigration law, and in our state of Alabama, that mimicked it. And so certainly immigration is the way we are talking about immigrants. The code is immigrants from Mexico, not from Canada, not from Japan, not from Europe, Mexican immigrants. And we have a lot of code and buzz language and in legislation that's harmful to them. Governor Kelly Barber from Mississippi said that if the election was just about immigration, the Hispanic community is going to vote for the President Obama in substantial numbers because of the language surrounding immigration.
Would you agree?
I think it's interesting that you mentioned immigration as the new, I guess, the new frontier of the civil rights movement. I think that's what you're talking about is an important development because, you know, we're so stuck on thinking black-white in the United States. So it's an important new element, and it indicates that things are changing. However, it the fact that there's a new big word, immigration, on the table of public debate does not detract from the basic, I guess, the basic discussion that we bring to audiences about the 2012 election. What we bring is the notion that things have changed for the better. Legal discrimination is over. But in a sense, legal discrimination was easier to fight. Now the fight is for social justice, or the fact that, as Artemisia mentioned, a certain segment of our identifiable segment of our population still is bearing the burden of the legacy of this discrimination. I think that's harder to fight. So it's easy. I think a lot of people are concerned about immigration because that's kind of like the legal issue. But it's more of I think a question that we're trying to address is social justice. Artemisia and I have this conversation every time we go out on the road. We have differing opinions about code words and things like that. Essentially, I like to summarize it this way. We look at a glass, and I say the glass is half full, and she says it's half empty. So we differ on our slightly on our perspective, but I think we both agree that there's still a lot more to be done, and it's much more difficult today to fight race as a problem in American democracy.
I wonder, though, when you take a look at immigration, you look at some of the states that are passing voter ID laws, that people are going to have to show some sort of legal picture ID, and that's directly aimed at people who are undocumented citizens.
Mm-hmm.
That's a legal aspect that can be fought. Do you see that as coming before either Congress, maybe even the U.S. Supreme Court?
Well, I'm actually trying to work on a book with my students about voter identification laws, and I work at a historically black college and university, so we're pretty sensitive about any form of voter suppression. And so President Obama won by increase of African-American turnout, youth turnout, et cetera. And so in many people's eyes, the voter identification laws are meant to suppress some of that black vote as well. For example, in Texas, you have a gun ID, you can go to the polls, but if you show that. But if you have a student ID, you cannot. I worked at Prairie View A&M University, and they had two major marches, one that informed a Supreme Court opinion with regard to where students can vote. I mean, that isn't a big issue with these colleges. And so when you have certain communities people in certain communities who can't drive to where to a DMV to get the proper license, right? If they are not able to have access as the DC Court of Appeals said in overturning the Texas decision, if they don't have access to these places, right, it is essentially voter suppression. So voter identification laws, trying to keep polls open in one community and not other communities, trying to end early voting, these are direct tactics that many African-Americans see as trying to suppress their vote on the eve of the first African-American president being possibly reelected or fighting for reelection. So it's not, in many cases, the voting immigrant population is relatively small, but the voting African-American population is much larger, so many see it as trying to suppress that particular vote.
Let me address specifically the question you raised about is immigration, is that a legal issue? Yes, I think it's a legal issue, It's a legal issue that needs to be addressed by federal officials, the president and the United States Congress. And the one of the reasons we are in a big mess that we're in today is because our national leaders have refused to address that issue for decades. It is a hot button issue they do not want to deal with. Therefore, this dispute, this controversy, really was raised at the state and local level, not by federal leaders. It only happened because legislators put referenda in certain states about that on the ballot, and Washington tried its best to run from the issue. So you are right, it is a legal issue that needs to be addressed, and we're in a pickle because they have not addressed it, and the problem, I can sympathize with governors and state legislators and local school boards. They are dealing with a very big problem that they don't have the resources or the guidance that they need. So Washington needs to take a lot of the blame for the immigration issue being so hot today. I also would like to step back and say there are tremendous parallels with the civil rights movement of the 1950s and 1960s. Washington refused to deal with discrimination in the South. And it was not Washington that led that fight. It was young people, students, old people, people who lived in those communities who made Washington by standing up and fighting and made Washington finally, belatedly, reluctantly take action. That is, I think, a very good and strong parallel to what has happened today with immigration. Washington wanted to ignore this hot issue, but local people, people at the state legislature and governor's offices, they have forced Washington to take action or address this, and it's awfully difficult for Washington because they let it get so out of hand.
As we run out of time, we obviously don't run out of issues to talk about, but I wonder what you hope people take away from a conversation such as this or from an issue such as this. Where should they be being more informed, and where should they be taking action?
I think the main thing I tell students and people in our audiences, where we go to speak, is don't go home with a resolution that you're going to be fair-minded and you're not going to discriminate and you're going to treat people right. That's not enough. You have to reach out. And don't reach out to the friends of your own. If you're black, don't reach out just to blacks. If you're white, don't reach out just to whites. Reach across the divide. Do something other than just resolving in your mind you're going to be a better person. The second thing is we try to tell people, frankly, take a look at us. Not only are we different in the way we look, but we're different in the way we think. But we have tried our best to lead a constructive debate without the rhetoric, debate about race in American democracy, and hope that young people can take that as an example.
Oh, I definitely agree with that. In the end, whether you're here, documented, undocumented, whether you're black, white, Asian, most Americans want the same thing, a safe community, access to decent schools, access to work and to jobs, and it shouldn't be seen as a zero-sum game. You allow immigrants to come in, that means we lose our job. Whatever it is that people see as a zero-sum game, it doesn't have to be that way. We have a large piece of the pie, and so when we have these dialogues and we realize that people who may not be the same as us still have the same types of desires that we have, I think that would help move us forward. In our relationship, we've 16-year relationship, and we disagree on certain issues, but we're able to have these constructive conversations and try to figure out, okay, what do we do? You know, how do we move things forward? And so I think the average everyday person can do that, do the same as well.